Did you know that you can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio? For more information, contact Craig at 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. this year. Call Craig today, 618-223-8385. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I think one of the most unfair mischaracterizations of Lutherans in general is that they don't care about missions. And sometimes that unfair characterization is made by Lutherans themselves, sad to say. They just don't know their history. And I think in some cases they don't understand their theology either. I think if you understand both of those, you realize that there is something essentially, to use the word that I thought I would never use on the air, there's something essentially missional about being a Lutheran. That's because there's something essentially mission-minded, another terrible twisting of words, about being a Christian. Joining us to talk about Lutheran mission work in India, Nigeria, and Papua New Guinea, especially the early work there, Dr. Al Culver. He's Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, co-author of an article in a forthcoming Lutheran Witness magazine titled "A Church Body That Would Teach." Al, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
It dawned on me once when I was making a presentation a couple of years ago, and I was talking about Missouri Synod history, that while the founding of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, our denomination, was made with their eyes wide open, they knew that they were founding a church body, a denomination. They understood that. They went about it as though they were founding a mission society. It's amazing how much they talked about the spreading of the gospel, the preaching of the gospel, in organizing this Lutheran denomination. Talk about that, if you would. Why? What is it about our theology that makes Lutherans, to use that term of art, mission-minded?
Well, you know, when you have the gospel of Jesus, you have to share it. And the early Missouri Synod people understood that from the get-go. If you look at what was going on in the mid to late 19th century, there, quite frankly, were not very many churches doing mission. And this is why all these mission societies formed in Europe. In fact, Wilhelm Leah sent missionaries through a mission society to America. And so some of these pastors that he sent over became part of the Missouri Synod. And the Missouri Synod made a very distinct and conscious, intentional effort to actually have the church itself do mission rather than rely on these external mission societies.
Is it because we understand that every congregation is a mission outpost, that every sermon is an evangelistic call, that that when the church gathers on Sunday morning, that is its mission?
I think that is fundamentally core to what it is to be Lutheran in doing missions. And this is what you have just said, Todd, is distinct and different from the common view of mission in the world today.
How would you describe that common view of mission?
Well, I've been working on this, tracing out the concept of Missio Dei, and you know, this developed it's a 20th century phenomena, but the idea is that in the broadest sense, everything that God does is part of his mission, and fundamental to its core is not the understanding that God comes to meet you in worship, where he gives you forgiveness of sins and the sacraments. It's that God is doing his mission through the world. And the Missouri Synod has always focused, and all Lutheran churches, for that matter, have focused on what Augustana 7 has said, the church can be found where the gospel is being preached and the sacraments are being administered. And so this is what church is, and church does mission because mission is going on where the church is found.
Does this mean that every pastor is a missionary?
Well, in the sense that we tend to reserve the word missionary for someone who has been called by the church and sent to a distinct place to proclaim the gospel to a people group who may not have heard the gospel before. In the broad sense, you could say that every pastor is a missionary, and from the standpoint of, if you look at what our goal is in foreign missions, a large portion of what we do is theological education. That's the training of pastors to go out in that land and to proclaim the gospel. You could well say, if you applied the same standards, well, the Missouri Synod has more than 6,000 active missionaries just in its clergy.
So coming back to kind of the historical roots in American Lutheranism, you mentioned Wilhelm Leia, who not only founded a mission society based where he was in Germany, but also, long distance, founded a theological seminary to train missionaries and pastors in the New America or in the New Western America. It sounds like whether we're talking India, Nigeria, Papua New Guinea, that model is being reproduced.
That's right. A theological education, or the training of pastors in particular, has always been core to the missionary activity of the church, and I think you could argue this goes all the way back to the book of Acts.
So why is that preferable to, and we're talking here about ultimately the goal is training indigenous pastors. If it's Nigeria, it's training Nigerian pastors. If it's Papua New Guinea, it is training pastors of their language, of their culture, of their nationality, and the same for elsewhere. Why is that preferable to sending, to speak crassly here, me, a white guy who happened to pick up the Nigerian, one of the Nigerian languages, and now I'm going to go be a missionary?
Well, I obviously you have to start, or at some point, someone started with sending a person who was not a Nigerian. Actually, in the case of Nigeria, someone heard the gospel and they sought us out and came to the United States and said, I want to be a Lutheran and can you help me out? We're talking about Jonathan Ekong there. But typically speaking, someone like you would be sent to a land and you would proclaim the gospel and those people would hear, and one of those people would be moved by the Lord to desire to study his word more deeply and take the path of becoming a pastor. And so on, the church would further develop in that place.
And is the goal here not only an indigenous pastorate and congregations there, but ultimately an independent church?
Well, that's right. Ultimately, you need the church to be able to continue where it's at. If you look at the history of the world, the church has moved around from place to place. Paul was, he taught in Corinth. There was a thriving congregation in Corinth. And after a couple hundred of years, that faded away. Constantinople, now Istanbul, used to be a thriving Christian center where it's not. And in the history of the world, these places have moved around, and one day, if the Lord doesn't return, and history follows a pattern, Europe may not be, and it may be Africans, and it already is, Africans going to Europe and training pastors and doing evangelism among Europeans.
We should also note that it's not just American Lutherans that are doing this, that many of these indigenous churches, I'm thinking here of the Lutheran Church in Kenya, are really the results, am I right, of Swedish Lutherans who were there doing exactly the same thing?
The Evangelical Lutheran Church of Kenya is a composite of Swedish mission work and Norwegian mission work primarily, and they worked among different tribes, but they're one church body now, yes.
Let's talk about some particulars here, beginning with India. What have been the efforts there? When did they begin to train pastors, to plant congregations, to begin to build up groups of congregations in India?
Well, the interesting story about India, which is the first foreign mission field for the Missouri Synod, and it took the Missouri Synod talked about doing foreign mission work for about 20, 25 years before it actually did it. And the main reason for that was the Missouri Synod did not have enough pastors to service the needs of the people in America. That is, reaching out to the Indians, the immigrants, and the other African Americans and other people groups within the Missouri Synod. So In 1893, the Missouri Synod made a concerted effort to go into the foreign mission field, and they decided to go into Japan, which seems a little bit odd considering we didn't actually do a mission work in Japan until after World War II. And for a variety of reasons, including the beginning of the Chinese-Japanese War, we could not send a missionary to Japan. And so they actually, because it was a convention resolution to go to Japan, they had to travel around to all of the districts, and granted, there were not 35 districts at that time, but they had to travel to all the districts and get approval from all the districts to change it from Japan to India. So in 1894, we sent our first missionaries to India.
And what did they do? We've got about a minute before a break. What would have been, I mean, 1894 was not that long ago, but it certainly was not jump on a plane and fly to India. What did they do and begin in India, these missionaries?
They chose to work with the untouchable people, the people that had been rejected by everyone. So even the Hindus had rejected them. And they did human care work, they proclaimed the gospel, and in a major way, they began educating the children. And in the course of educating the children, they also taught them the catechism and proclaimed the gospel. And it is almost 30 years after that work began that a seminary was established in India.
We're talking with Dr. Al Culver. He's Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It's Wednesday afternoon, February the 22nd. I invite your questions or your comments. Talking about Lutheran missionary work in India. We'll go on and talk a little bit later about Nigeria and Papua New Guinea. He's also co-author of an article in the forthcoming edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled A Church Body That Would Teach. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. If you visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, you can leave a question or comment for the second hour of the program, when we'll spend the entire hour talking with Pastor Bill Swirla about Ash Wednesday and the season of Lent.
Apostles Lutheran Church is in Melrose Park, Illinois. We invite you to our divine service, which is held every Sunday at 9:15. Please contact us at 847-455-0903 or check out our website at apostlesmelrosepark.org. We are located just south of O'Hare Airport, where airplanes are continually going up. Here at Apostles, we glory in the one who on the cross was lifted up for the sins of the world.
How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the Latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Continuing education for the Confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Dr. Al Culver is our guest for the next 10 minutes of this hour. Continue our conversation with him on early Lutheran mission work in India, Nigeria, and Papua New Guinea. You mentioned there India. One more thing there. You said 30 years before a seminary was established. What is the state of affairs now with the Lutheran Church in India?
Well, right now, the Lutheran Church our partner church has about 125,000 members. They have a seminary in Nagercoil, and in fact, Dr. Timothy Quill, my co-author, is right now in Nigeria, and in a week or so he'll be in India, and he's actually meeting to work with the seminaries there to help them become accredited.
Let's talk about Nigeria. This is one that I remember growing up as a teenager in a Lutheran congregation in Dallas, Texas. We heard a lot about Nigeria. I think our congregation had somehow decided to connect itself in a tangible way to mission work in Nigeria. What's the history of that?
Well, in 1928, Jonathan Ekong left Nigeria and went to the United States because he wanted to become a pastor. And he started to look for a church that taught what the Bible taught. And lo and behold, he ended up finding the Missouri Synod. And he received theological education here and went back to Nigeria. And during the midst of Depression, I think at the time it was called the Black Synod, African Americans who were Lutheran and part of the Missouri Synod raised $50,000 during the Depression, or actually raised $60,000 to send missionaries into Nigeria. So our first missionaries went into Nigeria from the LCMS in 1936.
And it is also a thriving, freestanding church today?
It is indeed. I just recently met with Archbishop Jonathan, or Christian Ekong, the grandson, and he believes that the Lutherans in Nigeria could become the third largest church in Nigeria.
And Papua New Guinea, what's happened there with regard to early and present day Lutheran mission work?
Well, you know, Papua New Guinea is one of these places that the Missouri Synod went to a people group who had never heard the gospel before. In fact, if you read accounts of Willard Bruce and Otto Hinze, who went there, it took them 3 days just to reach the highlands, where they're riding on the backs of donkeys and carrying their things up through rather treacherous territory. And to the Inga people, and these Inga people had never heard the gospel before, and it took 9 years of preaching the gospel before one person was baptized.
And this is one of those cases where, sadly, and not so, you know, not so long ago, the fervor for that mission work flagged a bit, didn't it?
Well, it did, and we had a number of things happening at the Missouri Synod. The Missouri Synod was in the midst of the controversy and turmoil over Seminex. We had a number of changes on the social and economic realities in our country and in the Missouri Synod. And so we went from a peak of 300 missionaries. It just declined every year till right now in Papua New Guinea. I believe we only have three or four career people in Papua New Guinea right now.
Is that in some way in the process of rebuilding? Is there a way out of that kind of depressed state of the mission work in Papua New Guinea?
Yes, we actually are in the process of recruiting for Papua New Guinea right now.
You've mentioned this several times in the course of our conversation, but along with the training of pastors, the establishment of seminaries, the planting of congregations in the mission field, there has always been, and I think it's kind of necessary given the circumstances in which this work is being done, acts of mercy, hospitals, orphanages. This is often a great way of extending the outreach, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. It goes hand in hand where a Christian who sees another human being in need cannot but help and try to provide for the care of the body. And we see Jesus did this when he saw the crowds were hungry. He fed them. And so Christians care for other people in body and soul.
Not everyone is cut out for this. We have the men who have come here to study, and they return to their homelands to preach the gospel. That's an easy one to understand. We have people, and you mentioned the two missionaries going to Papua New Guinea who will leave their native country and do this. What do you think it takes? My experience going through seminary is there were guys who talked about wanting to become missionaries, and that's all they wanted to do. They certainly wanted to serve as pastors in congregations, but their goal was to go someplace else. What does it take to do that, Al?
Well, I think in many ways it is a calling from the Lord. The Lord puts upon people's hearts and minds to go serve another people, a people other than themselves, other than their people group. And this is not it's not as if one calling is higher or lower than another, but the Lord takes each one of us. It could be, you know, as a child you grew up with a Chinese or Taiwanese neighbor, and you, by spending all this time with your neighbor, you develop a love and concern for those people. It could be any number of things that the Lord uses in your life that creates this for you.
How do you respond to somebody who says, well, this is all very quaint for you Lutherans to be doing this, but Lutheranism is a Western European phenomenon. It has its roots in Northern Europe, while it might be quaint to talk about Lutherans going to these foreign lands, what's really happening here is kind of exporting our culture, and maybe there needs to be something different for people of such different cultures and languages and lives. How do you respond?
Well, you know, this is exactly what the contemporary Missio Dei theology says. It would even go so far as to say that exporting a particular confession of faith is some form of paternalism. And, you know, quite frankly, what we believe, what we confess in the Book of Concord is that we have the unchangeable gospel of Jesus Christ, that the church is found where the Word of God is proclaimed in its truth and purity, and where the sacraments are rightly administered. And this does come down to, in many ways, to be an article of faith. What is it that you believe the church is? And we, as Lutherans, confess that we believe in one holy Christian and apostolic church. So this is an article of faith and not one of empirical proof.
What do our missionaries need the most?
Well, what our missionaries need the most is prayers and support for their continued work. And I think, by and large, the Missouri Synod has always had a great heart and interest in missions, and certainly remembering our missionaries in prayer. You can go to the Missouri Synod's website, and you can see who our career and short-term missionaries are, and to actually remember them in prayer would be a tremendous thing. You know, of course, there is a financial component or financial support is needed, but I would say that the single biggest thing that we need is people. That's the greatest resource of the Missouri Synod. I was on a conference call this morning with our regional directors, and one of the regional directors says, I have 18 open positions right now. That's 18 missionaries just for one part of the world. And that's without doing any expansion or going further. So I guess what you could say is the Missouri Synod, as a people of our 6,000 congregations, we have a tremendous amount of resources. And when you pray that the Lord of the harvest send workers into the field, you never know. You may find yourself sent.
Dr. Al Culver is Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's co-authored an article in a forthcoming edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled A Church Body That Would Teach. Al, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
When we come back, it's going to be Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., right around the corner. And, of course, we're already into the Lenten season, just hours into it, but with Ash Wednesday today, the church begins to observe, most of the church begins to observe the season of Lent. And it begins with, well, something that looks a little unusual. Someone stopped by the studio this morning And they looked different than they normally do. They had ashes on their forehead in the shape of a cross. And that's, of course, where we get the term Ash Wednesday. What is that about? Tonight, when I go to church, the congregation where I serve, one of the things that I will be doing, in addition to being the liturgist, in addition to presiding at the Lord's Supper, I will be doing the imposition of those ashes. And I will speak words, very long-held words, dust you are, and to dust you will return. Remember that you are dust. Now, those words go all the way back to the very beginning of the Bible. And so maybe that's a good place to begin when we come back on this Ash Wednesday, talking about both Ash Wednesday as a day celebrated today by most of the church, but also the season of Lent that it inaugurates. Pastor Bill Swirla of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California, will be our guest.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.